Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
That's my dad.
Hello!
Underpants?
That is hilarious.
She should mouth you. Rate and review this podcast or my daddy will go into a deep depression.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
Yeah.
Boom. Welcome to Grown Dad Business. This is Aaron Caliber. I am once again doing this intro on the road. I'm not being unsafe. Relax. But I'm heading out and doing some comedy. If you're listening this week, I'm in Little Rock, Arkansas, if you are from around there. Or if you have friends there, spread that around. And then next week, the second week of August, I think the 11th through the 14th, I'll be at the Houston Improv in Houston, Texas. Then the third week of August, I have some shows in Chicago again, so check that out. Or just stay abreast of that news. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'll let you know exactly where those shows are going to be. And then August 19th, Danny and Aaron Bring the Heat at Arcade Comedy Theater in Pittsburgh at 8 p.m. That's Friday, August 19th. And then the same night at Arcade Comedy Theater, Friday, August 19th, 10 p.m. is Comic Wars, my stand-up comedy game show. So check those out. And welcome to Grown Dad Business, episode Buffin and Thousands. I don't know. I can't believe I'm already at like episode like 46, 47. I don't even know. But I wanted to do something. I was thinking about doing something special for my 50th episode, and I'm not sure what I want to do. You know what I mean? Because it's hard to get some celebrity friends on my podcast because I'm headlining a lot more now, so I'm not like opening for a lot of famous headliners, but I'm thinking about doing something special. I don't know if that's with my kids, maybe have my wife on. She's right now going, nope, she's shaking her head listening to this, nope. Maybe episode 50 is with my mom, and we can get deep and talk about some stuff, and I don't know, we'll see. Tell me what you guys think, what you'd like to hear for episode 50. Before we get started, before I introduce my guest this week, let me know if you guys are also liking, I'm trying to go bi-weekly with Jason Clark and I doing some grown dad topics and then having some guests every other week, because I want to have a show every week for you guys. I want to stay consistent, and I kind of like how it's a little something different each week. You know, we kind of go back and forth with an interview and then some grown dad topics with me and Jason Clark. And I think it's fun. If you have any grown dad topics you want to talk about, you know, comment, send me a message, whatever, Facebook, Instagrams, the Twitters, whatever. Let me know if you have something you want me and Jason to talk about, because we pretty much bitch and complain about everything and talk about all kinds of stuff. And just want to give a shout out real quick to one of my partner sponsors, who are really awesome, Ignite Hospitality. If you're a comedian, musician, entertainer, you got to check out Ignite Hospitality Services. They help barter hotel rooms for you really cheap. I'm staying in Nashville tonight for $24. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. If you ever, you know, work at any clubs or you play any venues that it's hard for you to get a hotel room, or sometimes you play a venue or a comedy club where the hotel room looks like, you know, the bathroom in Saw, then you want to go through Adam at Ignite Hospitality Services, and he will help barter you an amazing hotel deal. And it's a little bit different. It's not like Hotwire or anything like that. Just check it out, Ignite Hospitality Services. And also, my favorite nerdy shirts in the world are from goodsandevil.com. Check out them for movie shirts, horror shirts, and a line of vegan shirts if you're into that. But yeah, goodsandevil.com. You can go there and save 10% on any order with the coupon code GROWNUP. And yeah, check that out. And I keep giving shout-outs to Kodiak Cakes, only because I love them and my family loves them with all of our heart. So if you are into eating some protein for breakfast, check out Kodiak Cakes. They sell them a lot of places. They sell them, I believe they sell them at Target now, but we usually get big, huge boxes of them from Amazon. But yeah, check out Kodiak Cakes. All right, without further ado, we're gonna get to my guest this week, and it's a pretty cool guest. The guest this week is Guy Tori. I've worked with Guy a lot. I've worked with him quite a few weekends in the last couple years, and we always have a good time. We always cut up, and I finally, you know, get a chance to sit down with him and talk on a podcast. We've talked before, but before I wasn't doing a podcast. But he is the younger brother of Joe Tori, also a famous comedian and actor. And that's what Guy talks about. Guy talks about kind of following in his brother's footsteps. It's really fascinating. I mean, seeing his brother have a part in Harlem Nights and like wanting to go, you know, into acting and comedy as well, but kind of follow his own path. And, you know, it's really fascinating. You might have seen Guy Tori in American History X. He's been in the movie Life. By the way, if you haven't seen the movie Life, there are some of the greatest comedy scenes in the movie Life with Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence, Bernie Mac, Guy Tori. I think, is Red Fox in that? I can't remember. But some really great scenes in that movie. Overall, the movie's, you know, it's good, not amazing. And Guy talks about that a little bit. But yeah, he talks about coming up through comedy and never having kids. And not, you know, not having kids in his plan. So it's really interesting, and how he grew up in Detroit. No, he grew up in St. Louis? Yeah, wait. Okay, now I'm brain dead. Well, you know what? Good thing that the podcast is coming up, so you can listen to that. And I don't know what I even talked about in my own podcast. So, all right, enjoy my talk with Guy Tori, guys. Well, I'm here with Guy Tori. How you doing? Guy Tori.
Who's that?
Guy Tori. Which one? Are you Joe? Wait, no, which one are Joe. You? Do people ever do that?
People mix this up all the time, really? Man. My mom still mixes this up sometimes, but she's 77 with cataracts. We're 78 with cataracts.
Yeah, so. But I'm 35 with three kids, and I call my one-year-old daughter Luke sometimes.
Okay. Like, well, I mix up there. I'm like, she could look like a Luke, though.
No, she's adorable. Okay. Little girl. No, like, our parents do that. Does that make you mad if people get...
No, I'm used to it. It's been happening before we even got into entertainment.
Probably like, when you're kids.
Yeah, well, because Joe was so bad in school.
Oh, really?
That I had the teachers I had that he had before me.
Yeah.
They just would have a memory of Joe being an ass. And then, we look alike. And it's like, you know, it's like they would call me Joe. So it's been happening my whole life.
What's the age difference?
4 years.
Oh, so that's like, see, my sister and I have 4 years, and that's the same thing.
Right.
My sister would come up, and they were like, oh, you're Aaron's sister.
Right.
Well, this son of a bitch. Like,
right. Yeah, Joe was very mischievous growing up, man.
You weren't bad?
No, I was actually a good kid, man. I was actually a really good kid.
Why was Joe so bad?
I don't know. I was smart, right?
Yeah.
I was a 5 out of 6 kids. So I saw my 4 older siblings get their ass whooped for shit.
Yep.
And I was like, you know what? I ain't going on that road.
Yep.
I'm gonna learn from them. I know what not to do to get my ass whooped.
I see. Yeah. See, it's always interesting. Like I always say every time I talk to people about their childhood, and I'm like, either your childhood was so messed up, or you had a bunch of siblings and your house was full and crazy. You had a full house.
We had a full house, man. It was weird because my mom and dad, you know, separated for a while.
Yeah.
Before they got back together, because my dad was a Vietnam vet, so that you know the PTSD kind of like really you know fucked his head up a bit, and my mom had to get away for a minute.
Mm.
So there were some times without pops,
right,
you know.
What did he do? What did he just leave? Like just go get away and work or just?
No, he was just I mean, first of all, I mean when they split up, he was just going through you know PTSD.
Sure.
You know, my mom couldn't take it.
It was kind of unbearable to be
around. Exactly. It was, you know, they started drinking and things, and they started fighting a lot, and it was definitely due to, you know, Vietnam.
Right, right.
So, you know, he was smart enough and man enough to say, you know, I got six kids growing up without a father. That's not cool. So he got back with my mom because we moved clear across the country. I was born in California. We ended up going to New York first.
Yeah.
And she didn't like how I was growing up in New York. We're fighting all the damn time with, you know, brothers and Puerto Ricans and shit.
Right.
So we ended up moving to St. Louis. That's why I always claim St. Louis.
Right, yeah. So where were you at in California?
Northern California.
Northern
Monterey,
California.
Yeah, Monterey, California.
Oh, all right. That's nice.
Yeah.
But then you moved to New York.
Then I moved to New York City. Queens.
How long were you there?
Ooh, I think I was there 3-4 years of my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah, but very impressionable years, man, because it was like we were fighting every day. We grew up in Northern California, right?
Right.
And we're dark as fuck. We got, you know.
But was it still back then?
But we were sounding like white boys. We were like, hey, guy, want to play ball? Hey, dude.
Yeah, I mean, was
and
it
they were
still like
who these niggas talking
about?
But
out in California, did you kind of grow up in that, like, everybody's kind of cool and liberal?
It was an army base. We lived on base.
Oh, yeah. So,
it was like everybody.
Pretty acceptable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very liberal, very, very like L.A.
So then you go to Jamaica, Queens.
Jamaica, Queens, and, you know, we're around Puerto Ricans, blacks, Jamaicans. We were around everybody. And we got cowboy boots on in the summer, high water jeans and cowboy hats. And they're like, who's these niggas?
They're like, you never heard of Mel Blunt?
who are these Wayne Brady ass dudes?
Do you know the Steeler Mel Blunt?
Yeah, famous Steeler.
Wore cowboy boots.
All the time.
He made that. There's a funny story about how like he made that cool for black guys back in the 70s.
Right.
And that was like a thing for a minute.
Right, and then it went away. And then Karl Malone came along.
Yeah, that's right. Karl Malone did sport
and
that.
He did the same damn thing. Tight ass jeans before. He had skinny jeans before they were skinny jeans.
That's true.
Malone had skinny jeans way back in the mid-90s.
I now remember as like a middle schooler remembering pictures of Karl Malone in a cowboy hat.
Yes.
That's right.
He's from Louisiana, so you know.
That's right.
Yeah, man.
So then you moved. How old were you when you lived in New York then?
I was from age like 4 to 7, basically.
Yeah.
So 3 years.
Yeah, that's, I mean.
Those are impressionable years. So you got kids, so you know those years those years are. That's a culture shock, though. When you're growing up.
Oh, absolutely.
When you're growing up on an army base where everything is manicured lawns and a multi, you know, cultural setting, you know, then you move to Jamaica, Queens, New York, where we was in the hood. Like,
yeah, no,
straight hood.
I feel like when people listen to this, they get little pieces of my life,
right.
But because I always relate to people. But I grew up a white kid, hockey player, living
you were white. You were really
white. Yeah. And then
it was like Donald Trump.
And then it was like we left an abusive household.
Uh-huh.
And my mom knew ladies from work,
mm-hmm.
and was like, "Look, there's this project co-op. It's cheap. You know, ladies from work will watch your kids." And I went in and I was like, "What are these black kids like?" I don't even. And I was like, I was acting up, trying to be tough, getting fights.
Right.
And
get
I told this story a couple times. My first week, it's like sixth grade of gym class. A kid named Rumpy. Yeah, sixth grade. He already got a nickname. And people from that I went to high school with, they know who he is. And I was just, you know, being an asshole
because
I was just trying to fit in.
Right.
He knocked me out. I don't remember hitting the floor.
Damn.
And I remember thinking that week, I go, you know what? I'm not going to fight anymore. I'm going to be funny. And that's what happened.
That's
I started
funny.
Being funny to get along.
That's funny.
But I totally relate to that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So then you moved to St. Louis when
you
were about
seven, 8 years old. Yep. Around that time.
How was St. Louis then? I mean,
we grew up
talking
in the hood. We grew up in St. Louis. So, like, we weren't, you know, my mom was a single parent raising six kids.
Right.
So, you know, we weren't, you know, she was making ends meet, man. I mean, it got rough sometimes.
Well, six kids, I mean,
it got rough sometimes. Some of the things we had to do, man, was, and we had nothing to eat and things like that. My mom was doing the best she can. It wasn't that she was unfit.
Yeah.
She would never drank, never smoked in her life.
Right.
You know, so
my mom,
she worked, two and three jobs.
My mom worked two jobs. There was probably sometimes I didn't see my mom for days.
Wow.
I felt like, you know what I mean? She would go straight from the hospital to the bar, bartending.
Yeah, my mom was a teacher's aide.
Okay.
You know, and then she became, then she ended up getting certified and became a teacher.
Right.
Yeah, man, it was tough, man.
See, I this is why I love talking to people about this. And I also, like, you and I have worked together before. I consider you a friend of mine. I can, you know, we talk, have a good time. Yeah, well, you know, I do all right. But, like, I love doing this because I get to know people that I kind of know a little bit from doing comedy with.
Right.
And it's always fascinating to find out, like, you know, what makes you funny. You know what I mean? And, like, and it is, like, that hardship and, you know, that struggle. And sometimes people come from normal families. Right.
I think it's just a gift, man. I don't mean, because a lot of people come from hardships and stuff, and then they end up being criminals.
And that's a good point. It's what did you choose, though?
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
like,
I mean,
that day Rumpy punched me.
Yes and no.
I had a choice.
Because I think you gotta have it in you to be funny. You gotta have that funny gene.
Yeah.
You really do. I mean, and I remember the first time I can remember making somebody laugh was when we lived in New York, and we had an aunt that lived with us, who was like Alice. She was like the nanny, but she was an aunt, a great aunt, actually, because my mom and dad were only children. So I remember she cooked breakfast one time, right? She had grits. She cooked grits, bacon, and scrambled eggs, right? So I ate all my bacon, ate all my eggs, and didn't touch my grits. It looked like fresh snow, right? And she goes, "Boy, you ain't eating your grits. I take that back. She said, "Boy, you ain't even touched them grits."
Yeah.
So I took my finger and started poking it in the grits. I'm touching it now. And she reared back to Serena Williams, backhand me, and then started bursting out laughing, man. And I had to be about maybe, I think, 6 years old at the time. Yeah. And she started laughing, and then all my brothers and sisters started laughing too. And I think that was the first time I can remember ever making somebody laugh. And it's addicting. When you make people
Absolutely.
Laugh, it's addicting. But I still didn't know doing stand-up was a job. Was in college, I didn't know it was real like a job.
Oh,
like,
right.
I mean, I was a class clown, a campus clown in college. I was a school bus clown.
Yep.
So, I mean, I never knew it was a profession. I knew Eddie Murphy was. I knew who Richard Pryor was. I didn't associate, you know, being a career comedian with
them. I think because when we saw those guys, it was always just like, oh, well, they're actors.
Right.
Like you gotta be on TV.
Right.
Like that you make money from being on TV.
Right.
I never thought, and even when I was like, I went into like filmmaking first.
Right.
Like just making, you know, independent films, thinking like, oh, I'm gonna make a living. Hopefully one day someone will pay me to film a commercial. You know what I mean?
No Spielberg aspirations, man?
No, I was more, I found out very quick. I always did funny stuff, sketch. Right. You know, I just happened to had to hold the camera and edit it because nobody else would.
Right.
But, you know, you find that out where it's like, oh, it was addicting to entertain people.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just like, man, I like making these videos, making people laugh. And then you start doing live stuff and, you know, absolutely. But, you never think that it's like
a job, right. And then it really didn't hit me until, you know, it's funny. The first comedian I've ever seen in my life live, I was in college, freshman in college. And, you know, they have those free shows on campus. Henry Cho.
Henry Cho,
Asian guy,
from
Tennessee.
Don't know him.
And though he's been around since forever.
Sure.
And he's Asian, but he has a thick Tennessee Southern accent. I mean, funny as fuck, man.
Right.
And it's funny. And I've been doing this shit for 24 years.
Yeah.
I'm not running to Henry Cho at all to tell him, hey, man,
really?
You're the first guy I ever seen live do stand-up.
Really?
Yeah, man, it's crazy.
Henry Cho,
man.
And it's funny now that we're doing those shows.
Right.
Well, you're way bigger than I am, but like, you know, doing those shows where you're at a cafeteria with eight students. You remember those days?
I've been at UCLA. I did a lot of them shows, man.
Yep.
A lot of those shows, man. Woo.
Cafeteria with the lights on.
Yeah,
at
the lights
noon.
On. They got a riser. It's not even a stage. They got a makeshift stage with risers on.
And then you walk in, you're like, shit, this is not happening. But then they're like, oh, but we're going to pay you $1,500. You're like, how you guys doing tonight?
Right.
You do it.
I remember one time right after the earthquakes in California, 94.
Yeah.
I had to do Northridge, which got hit hard.
Really?
And they had, the campus was kind of like, not destroyed, but there were some buildings that wasn't.
Right.
So we had to do it in the bubble. You know, you see those NFL teams, they have the bubble they practice
in. Yeah.
So they had a lot of those as classrooms and stuff.
Right.
So
I know you're talking about. Yeah.
So they had to do that until, you know, the campus got restored. But yeah, I remember doing one in one of those, and it was just weird.
Yeah.
Doing comedy inside like a bubble.
It was like this little tent.
Yeah, a little tent, like you like a freaking Jim Jones revival or something, man. Like, so you're gonna pass out Kool-Aid and shit and like, hey, drink this, you're gonna fucking die.
Wow. Well, so how old were you when you started stand up?
I was 23. 23.
And so where'd you go to college?
Southeast Missouri State.
Oh, okay.
Before they kicked me out.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Not only did I get kicked out, we'll get to that.
Well, so when you were going through high school, were all your siblings funny? Like, was it just kind of like...
Everybody in my family's funny, man. My mom is funny. She's a freaky side.
So it was like a cut-up family.
Yeah, it's like you always see, you saw the clumps.
Oh, yeah.
Nettie Professor, that's how it is at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Everybody's cracking on everybody.
Still today?
Yeah. Yeah, still to this day, man. It's a little bit edgier now, you know?
Yeah, but, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nuts.
So, and then how old was your brother Joe when he went into stand-up?
He started in college, actually.
Yeah.
Like, he started a little bit in college, going to little places like that. So, we had to be around maybe 20, maybe.
Yeah.
20, 20.
So, you were probably at the age...
He actually started before then. He had to be like 19 or
so you saw him start stand-up when you were in high school?
When I was...
If he was 19, yeah,
no,
or
I was 20. A freshman in college.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So I was a freshman. He was a senior.
Oh. Okay. Gotcha.
I think he was on that 5-year plan shit.
Right. Right.
So
right.
So he was a senior.
So.
And so he was on his way out of college. But I used to hear. I take that back. He started in St. Louis after college. He did 4 years. I'm sorry. He moved out to L.A.
Oh. Okay.
And I was a freshman in college.
Oh. Okay.
And because I remember seeing him on Apollo.
Really.
He was on Showtime after Apollo.
Yeah.
And I remember him sending. I remember him sending photos back.
Yeah.
He was an extra in Harlem Nights, Eddie Murphy Harlem Nights. So he was sending photos back with him and in the back with Eddie Murphy in the background,
yeah.
And Red Fox and Richard Pryor, man. I was like, wow, my brother. So that got me a lot of pussy back in the day.
Oh, that's
like,
something
my brother. Like, oh,
like you made it.
Oh, man, yeah.
That's, wow.
Yeah, so it was like, yeah, he got me a lot of pussy.
So what were your other siblings doing? Was anybody else going to entertainment or anything like that?
They should have been, they didn't. My brother, my oldest brother, older than Joe. Joe's older than me, but my brother that's older than Joe, he was military.
Right.
But he was a writer, more of a drawer and a writer.
Right.
You know? And then I have a little sister who's really the most talented one in the family when it comes to entertainment.
Hmm.
And she went to school for it. She wrote plays and won awards and plays in college and traveled. And she just didn't get into it. She ended up getting pregnant and, you know,
yeah.
gave up the draws. And
being a mom.
Getting married and being a mom. And,
that happens.
You know, yeah. So.
Sometimes people enjoy that.
Right.
Right, right.
Well, she wants to do, that's not what she really wants to do.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, she's being a mom, but, you know, she's still got that fire in her.
Right. I think once her kids are, and they almost all of them are out the house now, I think she's probably going to pursue it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just fascinating that, like, that you see your older brother getting to stand up, then you start doing stand up.
Well, that's how I was growing up, though. I mean, everything my older siblings did, I did. My
it's sister, kinda, it's my older like
sister
that,
ran
right?
track. I ran track.
Mm-hmm.
My sister ended up going to college and getting a scholarship in track. I ran track, was very good at it, got scholarship offers.
Yeah.
But two older brothers played football. I played football.
Right.
My older brother was in a band. I was in a band. My other older brother was in art. I went to Visual Performing Arts High School and was a drawer.
Right.
So everything they did, I did.
So what was that decision like? Like, you see Joe doing that, and you were just like, well, I'm going to do that too.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I'm like, I always was a class clown. You know, I was,
right.
was like the campus clown, class clown. So I
Me
was
too.
Like, yeah, I'm like, damn, you could actually make a living doing this shit?
Yeah.
I got kicked out of class for it. I can actually make, okay, let me give it a whirl. And it, you know, 24 years later, man.
So how long did you stay in St. Louis doing stand-up?
I didn't. I didn't start in St. Louis.
No, you didn't?
No, I started. I moved to L.A. not even to get into stand-up.
Really?
I moved to L.A. in 92 to finish my degree in school.
Okay.
I was going to go to UCLA, get my marketing degree.
Right.
And then, you know, by that time, Def Comedy Jam was already on.
Right.
And I was like, wow, you know, these I saw some cats on there. I'm like, man, I'm funnier than that dude.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So then I got to L.A., man, and 2 weeks after that, man, I said, fuck it, I'm going to try it.
So where'd you go up first?
I went up to this place, it was about maybe 30, 35 minutes outside of L.A.
Yeah.
I think it was called Mount Clair. And it was, Joe had a show, and this other comedian, Def Jam comedian, Ricky Harris.
Yeah.
And I was talking shit. They sent a limo to pick up my brother, so of course I rode. and Ricky was in the car, and I'm drinking. I'm like, I'm gonna tear this. I wrote some jokes. I'm gonna tear this. I'm gonna rip this shit tonight. I'm gonna tear it up. Because in college, they had talent shows, and I would just be silly. Like, I'd go on stage and be silly.
Well, and now we realize how easy an audience was when you were in high school, college, your college friends.
Right. So I was just doing being silly, but I still didn't really have aspirations of being a comedian.
Right.
And then when in St. Louis, I went up one time, you know, it's a little talent, so I just went up and told a couple of jokes, and it was okay. And I said, man, you know, fuck this. And I went to L.A. and ended up bombing. Oh, my God, I bombed.
How much shit did your brother give you?
Oh, let me tell you something. Because on the ride up there, I was talking shit. I was like a Rottweiler. I'm going to tell this motherfucker. I'm drinking and drinking and drinking.
Yeah.
Man, I got on that stage and died the death of 1,000 dogs. And Ricky Harris laid into me for about 15 minutes, man.
On stage?
On stage.
Like afterwards?
Man. Like when I was crowd work, I was funny. When I went to my material, it was shit. And I bombed, man. And it was like a 40-minute ride, you know, back. So they moved me the whole way back home, man. But I went up the next night.
Yeah.
The very next night, because it was a Wednesday. So that next night was a Thursday. I went up at the Comedy Act Theater, South Central, the Merritt Park, and did a little bit better.
Right.
And I started going up every night. Yeah. Every night, sometimes two times a night, three times a night. I sacrifice everything. I ain't worried about bitches. I ain't worried about parties.
That's what it is.
None of that. I was like, you know what? I'm be on stage.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to find anybody that would give me 3 minutes.
Right.
You know, I signed up for potluck on Monday nights at the Comedy Store. You sign up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you wait, and the show doesn't start till like 8 o'clock.
Yep, I've done it.
They pull numbers, and you wait there. And luckily, right next door was a hotel. It used to be a Hyatt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they used to have, this is back to the good old days, when it had happy hour, when it had free popcorn and hot dogs. And all you had to do was buy a soda or a beverage.
Right.
So that was our meal. Free hot dogs.
You know, you're not the first comedian that's told me.
We used to go over there on Mondays because Monday Night Football would be on.
Harlan Williams told me that, I think.
Yeah. Potluck.
Eating free hot dogs at the Hyatt.
At the Hyatt, man.
Yes.
Hot dogs, popcorn, and then I think water was free. And,
but yeah, you would buy a soda or a beer for like $2.
Exactly. And you was good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you wait because it's the West Coast, the Monday Night Football came on at 5.
Yeah.
So you know, you get there at 3, you go there, you write a little bit, you wait, you can't wait for the fucking happy hour to start.
Right.
And then they say, no, you boom, you got a meal.
You're watching football, and then you get on stage at 8.
Yeah. Well, no, you thought you got on stage at 8.
Yeah.
Because you'd be on stage, you'd be there waiting. You got an 8 o'clock spot or 8:15 spot or 8:30 spot or 9 o'clock spot, and then Eddie Griffin walks in and bumps you.
Yeah.
Or Howie Mandel walks in and bumps you. Or Damon Wayans walk in and bumps you.
Yeah.
Or T.K. Carter walks in and bumps you.
T.K. Carter.
Or Dice Clay walks in and bumps you.
Yeah.
And now your 8 o'clock spot is now 11 fucking o'clock.
I'm not trying to date you. What year was this?
This is 92.
Yeah, 92.
93. Yeah.
I always say, like, my first bump, I swear to God, and some of my friends know, I was at the Hollywood Improv. It was my first set, like, on a, you know, it was a good night. I think it was a Wednesday night, 8 o'clock show. I got bumped by Seinfeld.
Oh, wow.
And I was and my flight was I had a red eye that night home. And I was like, motherfucker. And everyone was like, you just got bumped by Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And he talked to you. Like, see, that was great. Who was the first person to bump to you?
I think the first. I mean,
like the most famous person when you started.
All those guys are just named. Yeah, Eddie Griffin was famous.
It always happens.
And Dice Clay was, you know, was the man. And Damon Wayans and all those guys. They were. But the thing about it was, the good thing about it was, you got to study.
Yeah.
You got to watch.
You're absolutely
those comedians work, and like you.
Yep.
And it's funny because you think you wrote the funniest 3 minutes in your entire fucking world. Like nobody's minutes are better than that. Then you go up and watch Eddie Griffin just destroy.
Yeah, you watch one of those guys talking about the drive over for 8 minutes.
8 minutes.
And murder.
And murder.
You're like, I'm talking about my whole life.
Murder.
And it's not good.
And you're like, wow.
Yep. He just talked about what he had for lunch.
Exactly.
Crush. You're absolutely right.
So it was good. You know, you take it and you use it. You don't get mad because they bumped you.
Right, right.
It makes you want to work harder so you can be in that position to bump somebody one day.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, and it's funny you say something that I always say to like younger comics. I'm not saying like I'm not, you know, I'm still pretty young, you know, but But guys starting out, and you know, they talk, you know, they go do shows and they're trying to meet women, and what you said, and I always have I told a couple guys, I said, what you need to do, like they break up with their girlfriend, right?
Right.
Their girlfriend, they don't want them going doing stand up, right, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
They break up with their girlfriend. I say, you know what? Comedy is now your girlfriend.
I know. I used to say that all the time. I used to say, comedy was my girl.
Yep.
I said, I said, that's my wife.
Yep.
It brings me up. It puts me down. Put food on my table. That's my bitch. And the thing about it was, there were guys out in LA who did comedy for pussy. Mm-hmm. And I found out who those guys was really quick, and I disassociated myself with those guys because they weren't in it for the true craft of it.
Right.
Like, I had this one dude who was from LA, and was like, oh man, he knew I was, you know, my brother's already made. He's already in Poetic Justice and did Def Comedy Jam and did all things. So he was already famous.
Yeah.
So, you know, this guy tried to latch on to me because of who my brother was.
Right.
And because he was from LA, he knew LA, and I was just learning LA. So he was like a comedy duo. Like, okay, we want to get on stage together. Oh man, let's go to these nights together.
Right.
But then he would introduce me not as Guy Tori. I used to go by Guy T before that. I was going by the world famous Guy T. And he was like, hey, this is Joe Tori, brother. That's how he introduced me to girls. Mm. This is Joe Tori, brother. This is Joe Tori, brother. This is Joe Tori, brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, I peeped game. I was like, you know what? Let me get away from this motherfucker.
Yeah.
And he's not even doing stand-up to this day. He never did anything.
Right, right, right.
Only thing I saw him online a couple of years ago, he was kind of still doing stand-up, and somebody put online one of the worst bombs ever. Like, this motherfucker bombed like crazy that went viral.
He's still around?
He went viral. That's the only thing I've ever seen him on. But that's because his head was in the right place. I mean, the wrong place. He wasn't trying to do stand up for real.
Yeah, what's the guys that, you know, that just go out and they want to hang out, or they want to, you know, network.
Right.
They think it's all that. You know, meanwhile, know, the comics that are in the back of the Comedy Store watching, you know, Sebastian work or, you know, some guys work, and then all the other guys are out networking. No, I'm going to go watch some craft.
Right.
You know, absolutely.
Right.
But I always say, too, I joke with my wife and I say, like, comedy is my side chick.
Hey,
you know, like, I leave at night.
Comedy, my main bitch.
I sneak out at night to go hang out with my side chick, funny. And that's comedy. Like, that's what it is.
I told my wife when we were dating, when I was married, I was like, look, don't make me choose.
Yeah.
It's an easy decision.
Yeah.
I love you, but this is my first love.
Right, right.
So if you're trying to compete with this stand-up, you're going to lose, baby.
Right.
And she lost. But I'm not.
Now, you were married.
Woman. She's a good woman. I was married.
Yeah. How long were you married?
6 years.
Six years.
Yeah. Wait. Good woman.
Were you recently divorced?
I've been divorced for about 6-7 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Still bitter. Go ahead.
Yeah. No kids.
No kids, man.
How have you, you know, because you're, I don't want to say how old you are. I don't care. Like,
I don't give a fuck. I'm 47.
47, you have no kids. Why never
I'm
kids?
I'm straight, dick work.
I know.
Rare. It's and amazing. I'm black. How rare is that? Goddamn. I'm a unicorn.
That's so
I'm a
funny.
Goddamn unicorn.
Oh, man. I wish I remember a buddy of mine did a joke like that and he elaborated on it. It's hysterical. But that is funny. I mean, you know, but why never kids? Like,
it's just, you know what? When we were married, neither one of us was ready for it yet.
Yeah.
She wanted to, you know, she just moved to LA from St. Louis and she was trying to feel out what she wanted to do with her life.
Was she a hometown girl you knew?
No. We're 7 years apart.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 7 years apart.
She just happened to be from St. Louis.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I met her when I was home one weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, just no kids, man. And then it just wasn't really going well. And like, I'm glad we didn't have kids though. Because that would have made the breakup even tougher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I see that, it's heartbreaking.
I've seen my brother go through that where having a baby mama and you know, them baby mamas, they say baby mama drama.
Yeah, right.
It's baby mama drama.
How many kids does Joe have?
Joe has four. He has a baby mama, then he has, I'm sorry, no, he just has three. I'm tripping.
Yeah, yeah.
He has two by his wife, his current wife.
Right, right.
And then one before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
I'm thinking of his baby mama got another one,
oh,
too.
Oh, okay, okay.
So I was including that, but that's not Joe's.
Do you ever regret that? Do you ever
not
feel like you want to have kids?
Not
or
at all.
No,
I don't
you're
at all.
I mean, I know
I regret that
for
shit
me
at all.
Being, I mean, 35, I just turned 35 yesterday.
That's right.
Yeah, and I took my first shot in months with you, and it got me turned in about 48 seconds. but no, like, I see, you know, you, and I'm like, man, like, for a second, you're like, that's the shit.
Like, it is shit.
It's just like for like.
I know
you
got to say the politically correct things because you got kids. You don't want to seem like.
But, oh no, you know. My wife listens to every podcast,
right?
You know, but like, but no, as a married, you know, I married young because I wanted to. Right. I wanted this
beautiful wife too.
Oh, my wife is amazing. I couldn't be doing what I'm doing without her. You know what I mean? I say that.
See,
almost
you got to find that one that gets it though.
She does.
You know what I'm saying,
but she saw results right. Every time I said I'm gonna do something. She knew I would go do it. She believed in me.
So if you ever say, I'm going to kill myself, she expected
she knows
you to
she
go
goes,
do it.
She he might be serious.
He might be serious.
And he'll do it efficiently as well.
Right.
She knows I'll find a good angle. but no, of course, like I see that and I'm like, wow, like that's not bad. That's a good life.
Hey, man.
You know, it's I mean, not that it's, I regret.
Yeah, no, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's if there's times it's like, yo, you get a little lonely.
Sure.
Times. I mean, I'm on the road 40 weekends a year, man.
Yeah.
You know, no wife, no kids, no dog. I ain't even got a plant living in my goddamn condo. I got nothing living but germs from girls that had been over there, DNA. But no, man. You know, in hindsight, I mean, if it would have happened, it would have happened. But it didn't, right. So I'm not mad.
Right. But you do you feel like you have, like, you do have a big family. You have nieces and nephews.
Nieces and nephews, yeah. You about know. 13, 14 on the little motherfuckers.
Do you ever feel like, oh, man. Do you ever feel like, though, without kids, do you feel like your fans are, like, part of your family? I've heard comedians say that. Comedians without kids.
My friends are.
Yeah,
my
right.
My friends.
Okay.
My friends are, like, my
right.
My family.
Yeah, so that
a lot
makes
of time,
sense.
My friends more than I do my actual family.
Right.
So, yeah.
Because you probably have to fly over to
but
country.
I'm a loner too.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know. So, my jokes are my kids. That's how I really feel. I feel
oh,
like
yeah?
my jokes are my kids.
You incubate them, breastfeed them.
Hey man,
teach them how to walk.
And then
that's
you're not
true.
Supposed to like some more than others, but
you really love one.
There's some jokes you like more than others.
Like one of
you
them.
I mean, you got kids. Tell
oh, yeah.
the truth. Do you like all your kids equally? You don't have to say which one you like.
I, you more. Know, I do.
Let's tell the truth. You
have, I
you
do.
Don't fucking lie.
I do. You know.
You like all your kids equally.
Yeah, I do.
You don't have like your first one because that's your first one. You don't like that one a little bit more because that's your
think,
first
like,
one.
And you think too, like, here's the thing, like, you know, people know I talk about it on stage. You know, people kind of know my kids through, you know, comedy. But like my son, he's goofy, he's
right.
funny, he's a boy. But then my older daughter, she's sweet and she's like my wife and she's smart.
See, I don't have kids, so I don't know.
But you so know, yeah, it's hard to explain. It's
but I have
like
jokes,
right? But you love them kind of.
Differently. But equally.
Yeah.
See, and that's the same thing.
Kind of like your parents sometimes, you know?
I love both my parents the same.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But my jokes are like, I have some that are my favorites, but I still love all of them. Like,
sure.
If I could do every joke in a set, I will.
Yeah, right.
But then I don't have 3 hours on stage. You know?
Yeah, right, right.
You know, I get an hour and it's
right.
tough, but it's like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, hey, I appreciate it, brother.
Hey,
I do.
Good, man.
It's always good for you. It's always good hanging with you. I love watching you work.
Appreciate
I love
it. Likewise, man. You,
man.
You know, I won't kick you off the show because you're funny like some other headliners do.
Come on.
Rob Schneider.
Oh, shit. People know that story. People are like, you need to keep telling that story. I heard that story on local radio, and they talked about that shit for 3 weeks, and I was like,
really?
I'm never going to be in an Adam Sandler movie.
He barely back in them. So
yeah,
who
cares?
A fuck,
it's all right.
Man.
I know, right?
What's written for you is written for you.
I know, right?
God has your name on the script, man. He got your name on the script.
Absolutely.
So that's what it is. Adam Sandler is the coolest. He actually was the one that put me in the animal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, you don't have to get along with Rob to be an Adam Sandler.
Right, right, right. I'm not worried about it too much.
Don't.
I appreciate it, brother.
Hi, Pim.
Thanks so much.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.